Okay, it looks like it's outside of three standard deviations. It is a problem. It's still within a Gaussian distribution. We probably should look at that in some more detail, especially now that we know that we're identifying such things in the finger region by these extreme color separations that Don Lim showed. We know that the finger area is not just body image as we had suspected, but blood image as well, which means that there's some contact mechanism in play at that point. It may be that we're seeing something in the way of blood there, which appears to be a finger. We should look at that, I agree. There's another thing I might point out, that when we talk about mechanisms, we stop short of saying simple mechanisms, and we have not at the moment considered any combination of mechanisms, and it seems apparent from these recent color stretches that it's possible that there could be multiple mechanisms in play. And I think that question that Professor Carter asked does bear on that exact point.
I have one over there.
I'm not sure. You may have partially already answered my question, but earlier this afternoon session, there was a graph on the board here that showed the hypothesis for the image, whether it was artifact or whether it was from a genuine body. And then in the area of the genuine body category, there was the Vignon Weber graph and the Pellicori contact theory. And yet yesterday we had from the VPA image analyzer, we see the result that there was probably some kind of the three-dimensional element suggests that there might have been some kind of a projection mechanism involved. And I was just wondering, since you were willing to take hypothesis of black elves in the woods, why the possibility of the projection mechanism was not considered as a viable hypothesis, even though it does suggest the element of the supernatural.
Now, I'd like to just respond to that first, I guess, and whoever else. I think you're probably referring to that one visual aid that I put up at the last of my series of talks. Please remember that all that was an attempt to put a graphical reconstruction of what I think the various image shading and mappings would come together as. I don't want to tie us down to thinking that particular reconstruction depicts exactly what must have happened. I mean, I'm not trying to say that there is an image formation mechanism implied here, just a sort of a mnemonic kind of a device to be able to help us maybe have some insight, or to be able to kind of graphically show what we're dealing with. As far as the image formation mechanism, there are so many things about this that are puzzling. I don't think we're anywhere near any satisfactory explanation.
Al was first.
Oh, okay.
We probably should have the little Jewish boy answer this one.
Well, Larry is the guy who applied to us. He wanted to hear the answer.
Okay. We have two people who would like to address that question, so stay here.
Just a simple comment, practice probably what my colleague was going to say. We haven't ruled out projection mechanisms. The problem is we can't make them consistent with the chemistry research. Projection mechanisms usually involve ionizing radiation type mechanisms. That would not give us the chemistry research. But pointed out this morning, that's our problem. We know some good ideas about the physics, we know some good ideas about the chemistry, but we don't know how to put the two together in a simple way.
Okay, before I answer the question the way Larry thought I was going to answer it, let me say something about the projection business. We've done a lot of experiments on that. I don't know whether Joan Janney's around or not, but she has done a lot of trials on different kinds of radiant energy falling on various kinds of cloth under all kinds of circumstances. And what you find out with these projection type things is that, as Al said, the chemistry is entirely different. When you hit a cloth with a highly energetic radiant energy flow, UV light, for example, in an intense burst, blows the surface of the cloth off. It's almost like you detonated an explosive on the surface of the cloth. It puts a shockwave through the cloth and sort of powders it. Infrared causes it to pop like popcorn. Nothing that she tried made cloth color the way the image appears. All she did was make it disappear. The other item is that we're not, I think I heard an implied accusation that we would ignore the supernatural. We can't observe the supernatural. If you can give us a matched litter of volunteers who will volunteer to be resurrected and let us do experiments on them, then we've got something to go on. Otherwise, we don't. Larry put his slide together to cover the things that could be observed in terms of scientific measurement, and that's all we can talk about.
My name is Dolan. I'm a Philadelphia lawyer only. The question is purely factual. Does microphotography show tiny traces of cotton in the crevices of the linen from the immediately previous run of the loom for 38 inches of the total width, and no such traces for the remaining 5 inches of the width, indicating that the cloth as we have it is composed of two pieces made at slightly different times and later put together?
It was reported elsewhen back in 1973 that someone from the European Center stated that there were traces of cotton in the weave of the loom. We have not been able to observe this microscopically. Any cotton that we've seen is apparently accidental or superimposed. We have had conversations with several textile experts, one of whom is here, who's the curator of textiles for the Cleveland Art Museum, who tells us that in ancient times there were linen weavers and there were cotton weavers, and they never got their twine confused. That those looms that were used for cotton were done by the cotton weavers and those for linen by linen weavers, and admixture is something that neither she nor any of her colleagues had ever heard of.
Done by Mike.
A whole bunch of things I want to say to this. First, we've got a pretty good breathing expert here in the audience who looked very carefully with me at some of the X-radiographs and some of the pictures that Vern had last night. I think we have evidence, first off, indeed there is cotton in the weave itself of the main body of cloth. The reason I say this very emphatically is that we had one tiny, tiny little bit of thread, a so-called zenith thread, from the heel area, about a quarter of an inch long, that was wrapped in polyethylene. It was one of the ones, in fact, that was pretty interesting to me because when I took it to the mass spec at the University of Nebraska, they said, aha, polyethylene. And I said, whoops. Turns out that the mass spec is sensitive enough to find the polyethylene. Well, this has been poked and prodded with a lot of maybe dissecting needles and things because lots of people were interested in it. What interested me most was the thread that had the most blood speck on it was cotton. It was not linen, and it was indeed twisted in with the linen. I don't know whether cotton absorbs blood a little bit more. I suspect it does. I think linen is not quite so absorbent. We subsequently looked, and I think we found that all the cotton on it was not an accident. However, we don't have that much thread from the side strip. Well, looking at it last night, we looked at the radiograph for a long time one evening, trying to follow a thread through from the main body across the seam as it is that, to see whether it is indeed a separate piece or whether it's a tuck or a piece of cording sewed on the back or just what it might be. We think we can follow, maybe, two or three threads across. This is very difficult because the radiographs were not that sensitive, and also because the Holland cloth underneath has a very strong pattern also. So you follow the thread across and you think, aha, I've got it. But you find out it's the hollow cloth, not the shroud. And so this is pretty tricky, but it looks as though from some of the things I've seen up here, the bands, remember you saw heavy dark bands and lighter bands, looks as though the bands go clear across. There was one particularly interesting one that I think Don Lin had that he flashed across so fast I couldn't see very well, showing that the color indeed was the same. That's where the image enhancement, the dyad thing. The color was the same clear across. I think that would not be if it were two separate pieces of cloth.
The thing that I was looking at,
the watermarks go through. So this must have been sewn on before the fire. Many of them do go straight across. Kate and I last night were looking at one. I pointed to Ray's jacket lapel and I said, it takes a pretty good seamstress to sew a seam and then top stitch it and not slip it a little bit. Look, this is the way it would look if they'd sewn it on. They wouldn't have been able to see 14 feet of seam that straight unless they'd been trying very hard to really match up a piece of cloth. Why would they do that? I don't know. But then we found several places, indeed there was, a little job. However, it looks as though if it had ever been severed, it is the same piece of cloth. That would mean that I don't think you would find different cotton in one than the other. The whole thing, though, doesn't mean a thing. It couldn't prove authenticity, it couldn't disprove authenticity. We wouldn't know why it was put on, but it's fun to think about, it's fun to look at. It doesn't prove.
I agree. That's one of the great fun things, to think that that might be attached. No interest to anyone.
Eric, excuse me. If we keep to our schedule, we've got about 5 minutes before we are to finish. So why don't we finish up with these with the people who are here to ask questions, then we'll dismiss the symposium.
Okay, and I believe we have three questions. This, and that. That's it.
Yes.
Okay, so those are the last.
My name's Michael Fitzgerald, and I just happen to be one of the people that believe that Jesus Christ was raised from the dead. And I guess my question's one of logic. I understand that science cannot analyze spirit. Science can only analyze that which it can see, hear, smell, taste, or touch. And plus, there's other people here, the religious people, who would really like a comment on that. Is it or is it not the cloth that Jesus Christ was wrapped in when he was raised from the dead? If science says they can't give you that answer. Yet I'm impressed by all that scientific data. And I'm sure they were financed for this project by a lot of people who wanted that answer. Before you even start on this project, you should logically go and see what the Bible says about this specific topic. And the Bible is very specific about it. It's very precise. And the fact of the matter was that Jesus Christ was not wrapped. He was wrapped in a linen cloth by Joseph of Arimathea. Nicodemus came along and wrapped him in a sendon, which is strips of cloth about that wide, wrapped as a mummy, which was a traditional wrapping at that time. When Peter came in,
we're going to have to call a question. Do you have a specific question, sir? We are.
Well, that's it. If you were going to analyze something and say, well, we're going to analyze this thing, and we're going to come up with an answer. First thing in scientific method, you got to state the problem. What's the problem? Your problem is, we found a cloth. We want to analyze it. So that's what this isn't. This is just some cloth, right?
Well, I'm sorry. I understand what you're saying, but let me make this comment relevant to that exact question. We do not operate in a vacuum of things that have been done on the shroud. There are many, many groups in the United States and in the world that have examined this shroud from the perspective that you suggest. There are very, very few. In fact, we may be the only one that has examined the shroud totally in the scientific context. That is what distinguishes us from the other groups. We have tried to publish in the scientific literature. Now, I know that people, undoubtedly, we receive some money from people who are religious, and we appreciate every cent we got, because this has come out of our own pockets as well. But let me say this. Even if you are approaching the question from a religious standpoint, it seems to me that you would like to have a body of information which is taken from an objective group which does not violate the scientific approach and which you can rely on because you can check the information in the scientific literature. That is what we've been trying to do, and I think we've been pretty objective about what we've been doing, and then the information is there for all who wish to speculate, and it's there and it's been refereed by an unbiased audience, and the information is facts. Seems to me that's available.
Thank you very much. I certainly don't disagree with that. I think you're tremendously objective, and I learned a lot from this about scientific method, scientific data. But I guess the bottom line of it all is what are you going to believe in life? Is it going to be scientific data or the Word of God?
My name is John Lake. I'm from Boston. I had planned on directing the question to the pathologist. I know he's not here, so it's awkward for anyone who answered. The question is, what would be the way of detecting body decomposure on a linen which has come into physical contact with the cadaver? And at that, is the absence of evidence of decomposure unusual in these cases?
John Heller, would you address that question? And then I think we have a comment by Bill Modern following this.
There are a variety of decomposure products such as cadaverine and others. No such product of any kind whatsoever was found on the shroud. That's all we can tell you. There was none found.
Okay, did that answer your question, sir? You hear the answer? Okay. Excuse me, we've got one comment by Bill Motter here, I think, on the last question.
The gentleman just left a while ago says, what can you believe in, either scientific fact or religion? My answer is simply this, I can believe in both.
That was Bill Modern from Sandia Laboratories.
Also add to that it's not only can we believe in both, I think it's our right to believe how we believe and how we interpret, but we have to be objective too.
Ready with a question?
My name is Lisa Train and I'm a student. I would just like to ask a member or members of the team to comment on the accuracy of carbon-14 dating.
Is Bob Deniger here? Bob, would you comment on that, please? You can just tell me no. But is he up in the balcony? Don't leap off. Bob Deniger has looked into this carbon dating question on several occasions, and he can certainly answer the question of how accurate carbon dating might be. And I just remind you that Bob Deniger is a PhD physical chemist as well as an Episcopal priest.
What was the question?
How accurate is carbon dating?
Most of the new methods for carbon dating using the accelerator technique will sign their names to work plus or minus 120 years. If you take a look at their data, it's probably about 50 years. They just like to double it, just to be on the safe side.
Okay. Eric, is that the last person you had over there?
This is the last one right here.
Okay.
I'm Mike McManus again, I'm a columnist. I'm interested in what remaining agenda you see, if any, for your work. I heard a reference that you're going to publish in a reasonably expeditious time, and that will be the, quote, end of the project. Are there areas other than this carbon dating where you feel you want to pursue more, and is there a need, if so, for contributions, and if so, where should they be sent so that we can tell readers about that?
Well, I'd like to respond to it if I could. There is an awful lot of interest in the research on the shroud, and I think that's obvious. What we have attempted to do is to take some data and then try to analyze it. And we're at the point in time when we're making available all of our thinking and presenting our data to the public, to the scientific community. Now, I think what happens in the future largely depends upon people other than our own group. It depends upon what interest is there. I don't believe that the interest in the shroud is suddenly just going to go away as dismiss this symposium. At least I would hope not. As far as I'm concerned, we have still not achieved the basic objective, and that is what caused the image. That's a scientific question and something we can answer. We have failed in that sense to be able to put all this together, and this has been said many times here by various people. That's not saying we ever would be able to put together scientifically what the shroud is, and there could be a lot of reasons for that. So I guess what I'm saying is that whatever would happen in the future, I think largely depends upon people such as yourselves. Anybody else want to respond to that?
Okay. I would like to make a comment on that. I think that it's been suggested in many of the papers that we've seen here that the answers to the questions have raised some new questions. There's no question about that. We have a situation where we set up a nonprofit corporation which was specifically tailored for a one-shot evaluation of information on the shroud and would end a logical conclusion with a final report. We are not at the stage yet of building that final report. When that will come, we're not exactly certain. Of course, carbon dating is something that's foremost in our mind. We would like to do that within the context of the group as it stands at the moment. Beyond that, I think what you'll see is that the arrangements that were made, if I'm not mistaken, I think this was sort of the consensus, in setting up this particular nonprofit organization will come to an end, and it will evolve into some other kind of thing, which will consider questions that have been brought up. But I think you will see continued work. I think you'll see a lot of the faces change. I think that many of us are really burnt out and would like to spend a little time doing something other than shrouding. And so you will see faces change, but I imagine things will continue. And at the moment, I'm not soliciting funds, but there is a mechanism for taking funds in the present organization, and my understanding is that those funds, organization will remain as it is for a short while. I don't know how short that might be, a year or so or more, I don't know. But there's certainly a mechanism for taking those funds, and any funds that were still in the hands of the group would pass on to the evolved group. And I don't think we've ever had too many funds. So.
Carbon 14 is going to cost us.
Yeah, carbon 14 will cost us.
The old way
was
like $550
in 1968. I don't know what it is now. The accelerator might be a lot more than that. How much did you say?
In 1968, it cost you
$550
to get carbon
grade. Yeah, and I'm sure, say the date again. 68. In 68, it was $550. So you can imagine with the new equipment and stuff what it would probably cost. I am not soliciting funds or anything like that, but it would be New Tech Corporation, I suppose, would get there in Amston, Connecticut. I don't know what the zip code is or anything.
I think I can give that information. If anybody is interested in helping the project and would like to make a donation, you can do it. We don't have this written down. This is sort of a spur of the moment thing. But you can send it to the Shroud of Turin Research Project Incorporated, Post Office Box 1, Amston, A-M-S-T-O-N, Connecticut, 06231. I'll repeat that. Shroud of Turin Research Project Incorporated, Post Office Box 1, Amston, Connecticut, A-M-S-T-O-N, Connecticut, 06231. Your donations would go entirely to supporting the research, but it does not go into the pockets of the scientists. It never has. Okay, with that...
Yes, and before we close, may I do this?
You may.
We have had the best of attention by Connecticut College, and we are very appreciative. You've been most gracious hosts, and I want to thank you on behalf of the entire group for taking such good care of us. Yes. In addition to that, Tom DeMahala took in literally hundreds of volunteers to help set up this, both the symposium and the exhibition of the pictures and so on, and we give you our greatest thanks as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, one last thing here. Tom DeMahala. Tom DeMahala. Should I have said post-it box 7 or should I said 1?
Either.
Okay, keep what you had. It's post office box 1. Okay, with that, I'd like to dismiss the symposium. Thank you very much for coming.